Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 175, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 8, Pangs, and Angel, season 1, episode 8, I Will Remember You. My name is Selena, and I'm joined by superfan Caitlin and newbies Ariana and Danielle. Hello.
Hello.
I'm so glad that we're at these episodes. I'm very, very excited to talk about I Will Remember You, and I'm sure Caitlin is too.
There was no way I wasn't going to be on this one.
I know. I can imagine. Yeah, we all have that one episode that we absolutely have to be on, and I feel like this one must be yours. So yeah. I'm glad. But yeah, we're going to get into talking about both of these episodes. But before we do, as always, we want to remind you of the contact information. You can get in contact with us with your spoiler-free comments at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So, fun facts this week. Danielle, why don't you go first? And I'm going to be very disappointed if it's not like your entire Euro trip.
Well, you just spoiled it.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So basically, I gave up my whole life and went to Europe for a month. And it was amazing. And I felt like I was out of time. And that like the world had stopped around me. And then I came back and realized it hadn't. But it was still one of the best things I've ever done.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm so glad you had a good time.
Yes, me too. And thank you for your offer of help when I was, I had really bad like bank trouble the day I got there and like the day after. And it was pretty bad. And so I really appreciate you offering to help because it made me feel so much better knowing that there was like someone close to me geographically that like could help if I needed it.
Oh, that's nice. I'm just glad that wasn't an indicator for your whole trip. I thought, what a way to start with wrong. But God. Glad you had a good time. And Ariana, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact, well, it's wasted on you guys because none of you watch Avatar except for Caitlin, and Caitlin has weird priorities regarding Avatar. But this week is, or it just ended, it was Zutara week, so Zutara 5 Eva.
Sigh.
What about you, Caitlin?
My fun fact is that my life is in half disarray because I am planning a move in the next week.
Oh, wow. Where are you going? Leaving?
Just, like, half an hour away to an apartment.
Oh. Still very exciting.
Yeah, I'm in the midst of packing and everything, so it's, my life is a bit messy.
Oh my god. I'm still in the middle of moving. Like, we moved already, but we have to clean up the old apartment, and we went back last weekend, and, like, something happened, and a giant window fell on me and, like, shattered my hand, but it's fine now, but, like it's very scary to move, so be careful. It was very traumatic. I covered my head with my hands, so I guess it could have been worse, but, yeah. So that's a mess. Oh, real life sucks. This is why we have fandom. Like, this is the exact reason. And I actually, I guess that kind of was my fun fact. I just also wanted to kick in that I finally watched Ghostbusters because it's finally out in Denmark and I loved it. So yay. Yay, Ghostbusters. I thought it was amazing. Moving straight along into our first episode, which is Buffy, the fourth episode of season... No, the eighth episode of season 4, Pangs. The synopsis, which I believe was written by Mitch, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Goes, in this episode, Buffy has pangs for Angel when he broods his way on into Sunnydale to protect her from an angry Native American spirit. During some landscaping at UC Sunnydale, Sander falls into a long-lost missionary, not only giving rise to a Native American vengeance spirit named Hoos, but also inflicting a myriad of mystical diseases on Sander. As Angel watches Buffy from the shadows, Spike walks around like a poor, lowly orphan boy, just looking for some scraps to eat. I'm always missing these references. With Spike being effectively neutered, he's allowed in on the Thanksgiving dinner at Giles' house in return for info on the spirit. In a final confrontation with the Native American spirits, Buffy fells a giant bear incarnation of Hoos, and a healed Xander lets slip that Angel was watching the proceedings. All right, so there's a lot to...
Like, Mitch's synopsises always sound the way Mitch speaks.
I know. It's so true. It's very tongue-twisty. Without any chance to rehearse beforehand. it's a lot. But it's good. It covered, I think, all the bases. Pangs, actually, fun fact, this is an episode written by Jane Espenson, and it is often, for better or worse, and I guess we can get into that too, it's a very sort of famous Buffy episode. Like, it's very often quoted because of the many fun lines in this episode and the sort of interesting shifts in dynamic. You know, Spike is a part of the group, quote unquote, like, peacefully in this context. You know, Anya is finally a part of the group. We see them all together at Giles's house, and even with the premise, which is just bizarre, especially like by today's standards, there is a lot of sort of community feeling in this episode that puts together the group as we know it. And yeah, I don't really know where I was going with that. I just thought that was a fun thing to share. So I'm very curious just to hear how the newbies sort of felt about this episode or reacted to the stuff that happened in it.
Well, okay. So I'm just going to get on my soapbox for a second, so then that can be done, and then we can talk about the actual episode. For me, it's kind of difficult to separate, like, the Native representation that was happening versus the other things, but I can because Spike was really great. But that was something that I kind of had to get over. The Native representation in this it's kind of problematic, but I do think that there's some things that they did really well. Like you said, Selena, Jane Espenson wrote this episode, and she's just a wonderful human, like, in life all around. Mm-hmm. She's a really great person. And I know that she did research, which I think mm-hmm. is really great. I appreciate that. I'm sure lots of people do. So the Native tribe that they use, that's an actual tribe from the Santa Barbara area. So that's really great that she used an actual tribe. And because often in, like, movies like Pocahontas and stuff, you know, it's just like everybody treats Native Americans like they're all the same, when each tribe is like it's literally its own nation. It has its own nationhood and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're very different with their own unique cultures. Some things that I didn't like, well, that they did poorly, is obviously they had a lot of Native American stereotypes going on that mm-hmm. are not so great or not good at all. And they did a lot of othering here. But I think the one thing that they could have done really to improve is they needed to have, like, a Native American person who was alive, a person from that tribe who's mm-hmm. alive. Because, I mean, I think the things that really bother people about stories like this is that it makes it seem like Native Americans are all dead, which is definitely not true. like mm-hmm. there's lots of Native American people walking around, going to the grocery store. There are people who live on, like, on their reservations and within their tribe, but there's lots of people, like, in LA, you know, in Santa Barbara. So I think that is something they should have made more clear, is that there is alive human beings who are Native American, who are alive and regular people who don't go hunting you, because that is a bad stereotype to mm-hmm. kind of have.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I was going to bring that up too, is that something that I talked about on Twitter too, is that this episode, and we had a comment from Jenny Yu, I think, who says what she liked about it was that it sort of presented different points of view very clearly. And, like, Willow and Giles and Buffy and Spike were all allowed to have these opinions aired. But the problem is that they are all having an opinion about Native Americans. Like, none of them are Native American, and they are all projecting their point of view onto that, which is like
Willow,
you said, othering.
Yeah, so like Willow, I think they put her as like the voice of Native Americans, but also like she doesn't kind of have the right to be the voice of Americans. Mm-hmm. She's just kind of like shedding her white tears. So
right. And especially nowadays, because there's so much, because that's what the one thing I was going to say. And obviously, as a non-American, my point of view on this is sort of much more removed than anything else. But what I was like amazed by is that they addressed it at all, because most American shows that I watch sort of ignore the existence of Native Americans altogether. So it was a point of view where I, as a non-American, I don't know anything. Like, we don't learn about it in school. We have our own history to learn about. So for me, it was like, oh my God, like, there's so many points of view on this. There's so many, like, there's so much tension. Like, they have all these dilemmas. And that was like one of the first times that I had been confronted with that in my entertainment. So in that way, I thought it was like a positive thing, but that doesn't mean that we can't still be like, it feels a little, you know?
No, I think they were definitely trying, which is good. Mm-hmm. It's better to try than not try.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, I don't know if Caitlin and Danielle, you had anything to note about this, the point of, or the main story of the episode.
I'm totally with you guys on the representation thing. That kind of, it took me out of it a little bit because it seemed really weird. It also, the episode seemed slightly disjointed because mm-hmm. I loved the quips, and I could see how this is, like you were saying, like one of the most quotable, I mm-hmm. think, which I could definitely see because there were just so many one-liners just flying everywhere, which I really enjoyed. But it still felt really disjointed, like they're doing a Native American thing and it's also Thanksgiving. And I don't know, I just couldn't get into it all the way. The only other thing that kind of held me back from liking this episode was the fact that when Doyle had gotten the vision about what was going on in Sunnydale, I thought it was going to be something much worse.
Yeah.
It gave me the impression. Okay, so that's not just me. It gave me the impression that there was like something world ending or something like really dangerous. Not to say that what was going on was like minor, because people were still dying. But mm-hmm. the fact that he had a vision about this, and it was treated with a much lighter tone, or like much fewer stakes, that I was really taken off guard. And expecting
it didn't seem like enough of a reason to bring him there. But I guess there was a moment when, you know, he does save Buffy from getting a knife in the back. So I think that's where we're supposed to think, oh, well, that's when she would have died. But it just seems really like, really? That's how she would have died? You know, like of all things?
It doesn't feel like anything more unusual than she faces on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. I totally agree with this. By the way, speaking of one-liners, I did have to say, it comes up later, but the line that people quote the most from it about Spike talking about the bear is actually a source of one of my biggest internet embarrassments, because I was watching this episode at one point, and I was like tweeting Jane Espenson, like, oh my God, I love this episode. And she replied like, oh, I'm so glad. And then I said, my favorite line is, I made a bear. And then she was like, yeah, Joss Whedon wrote that. So, oops. So I don't like that line now. So yeah, internet fails. I mean, a little bit less, more about the plot of the episode, The Monster of the Week, The Ghosts of Thanksgiving's Past, as Mitch calls them. Willow presents the idea that the spirits should be left alone, or left to be their thing due to the past injustices that have been done to them, while Giles and Spike think it's those damn British people coming here and telling us what to do, right, guys? They think it's okay to take over. And I think, you know, with everything that we've already talked about at the NSA, I almost feel like it's weird to have an opinion on them having an opinion, because we shouldn't really be dictating this discussion. So I don't really know if there's a lot we want to say about this, except the bear transformation, which was an interesting thing that they did. And one of the things that always sticks out when you think about Buffy, because it was like a real bear, which is like strange, but it was like super CGI'd into the apartment or something. I don't even know how they did that. Do you know how they did that, Caitlin?
I feel bad.
I didn't look it up. What else do you guys want to talk about? So Spike's storyline, he is turned out. Spike's storyline, I guess, there's a lot to say about him. Spike is very sort of down in this episode. The last we saw him, he escaped from the initiative, and now he's like wrapped in a blanket. He's clearly in bad shape when he comes to see Harmony. I don't know what you guys thought about that reunion at the beginning of the episode.
I don't know why Harmony is still here. I know some people like her, but I'm just like, I mean, I guess they needed like a new Cordelia. Since Cordelia's gone, they wanted like a new like ditzy girl who's like into clothes or whatever, but she's like no Cordelia, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like her, but it's hard to say why. So I think like what I like about her at this point in particular was that that she's sort of, she's again a different kind of vampire, that we're seeing like all these different ways
that
to be
true.
A vampire.
She seems like a very ineffective vampire.
Yeah, she really is, isn't she? And she's like, she's very human in her way of being a vampire, which I think is interesting and which makes me kind of like her. Also as a contrast. Yeah, she sleeps with a stake in our bed. I guess so. Then after that, Spike goes to Giles and he basically explains what is happened to him, which is that he, you know, they made it so, which we, what we kind of saw already, that they made it so that he can't bite anyone. He can't even hit people, which again kind of allows him to sit in with them and to be tied up and stuff. So I don't know what you guys, especially the newbies, but Caitlin, feel free to weigh in on this as well. What you feel about this change for Spike's character? Did you see it coming at all? Do you think it's interesting?
I have been wondering for a while how they were going to keep Spike around. Mm-hmm. Just because to have someone around who's constantly coming in, trying to cause problems and failing miserably and then retreating, it's funny, but after a while it would get old. So I had been wondering how they were going to keep him around, because, I mean, he has such a magnetic personality that there's no way they weren't going to.
Right.
I mean, it's not like I know everything because I know nothing, but like I know that that's how shows work and there's no way they were going to get rid of him. So I didn't know that they were going to, like they keep saying, like neuter him, but I find it really funny. Like it takes him, he's not all that intimidating to begin with. Like he's kind of funny in general, but it takes him, puts him in a new light and gives him a different spin of humor. And it's something I really enjoy.
I've always liked this for Spike because I don't know, kind of like Danielle says, it knocks him down a peg or two, which, I mean, how much does Spike actually need that? But it gives him something new to play with in terms of, you know, comedic timing, and he is just brilliant with
that.
Well,
speaking of, like, humanized vampires, I feel like Spike seems very human. Like, not like a great human, but like a petty human. Or like a delightful human. He seems like he would be great on the cast of like Bachelor in Paradise, which is my favorite summer show, summer reality show.
Oh my gosh. Interesting. I think that's an interesting point too. And I think you were saying before about Harmony being the new Cordelia. I think if anyone's the new Cordelia, I think it's Spike, to be honest with you.
I would agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. The dynamic is sort of similar and in the way that they don't really like him. But,
it's true. And he's kind of like, why? I don't get why you don't like me.
Yeah.
And they're like, because you tried to eat us like several times.
Exactly. But he's like, but I'm a nice guy now. but I do think, and I agree with Danielle, I think it's such an interesting way to bring him into the group, because he is this kind of character that he was meant to be, like a one-time character that was just going to get killed off. And then they were like, oh my God, this is like a fantastic character. And I think the way that they brought him back for this is much better than if he was just running around. Like he's still a villain. Like nothing's changed except that he can't physically bite anyone right now. But bringing him into the group and allowing him to interact with them and allowing them to have this like antagonistic relationship is something that I really enjoy. And I know there's like mixed opinions about, because some people don't like Spike, which is fine. Wait, who I don't understand. Like
Spike?
I don't know, weird people, but there are some people out there that don't like Spike, and it's fair enough. I think it's one of the best decisions that the show ever made, in my own humble opinion. So, and it, you know, it's he's a very interesting character. So, I'm all about it.
I always find it interesting that he actually decides to go to
them, right?
Yeah. Like, that it actually occurs to him to go to them, mm-hmm. and that he thinks he will get help. Like,
yeah.
I feel like in his place, it would not even occur to me to, like, go to my mortal enemy and be like, help me.
But again, look at their history, you know, like him and I think he, like, and that's another thing I really like about Spike is he has a lot of respect for Buffy. Like, he has worked with her before and he respects her strength and her, you know, standing. He even thought she was behind the whole initiative thing, you know.
Oh, that was like my favorite line. I know. I always weird what this bitch would do when she got some funding.
Yeah. So I think it makes sense. And I think he does, like, he, again, we've seen before with Spike, like, he's evil, yeah, but he has reasons for doing what he does. Like, he's never just randomly destructive. And I think this is sort of a perfect thing. He's like, well, you get something from me, I get something from you. You know, we both make it out of this with something. So he can't understand why they wouldn't just say yes to that. Another newcomer who is sort of inducted into the group this episode, well, kind of in Fear itself too, but especially in this episode, is Anya, who is seen at the top of the show in the scene starring Buffy's cowboy hat, watching Xander dig. And then, you know, she sticks with Xander when he gets ill and he calls her his girlfriend and all that stuff. So what do we think of this? What do we think of Anya joining the group?
I am obsessed with Anya. I love her. I feel like she's very much needed now that Cordelia's gone, because after Cordelia left and then Oz is gone, I'm like, who do I even care about on this show anymore? But Anya,
well,
she's
Spike and Anya.
Yes, so with Spike and Anya, I care again. They're bringing the funny, which is good for me.
Agreed.
Those two have a lot in common if you think about it, because Anya is a former demon turned mortal, and Spike has lost his ability to hurt things. So I want to see those two just, like, talking about, like, back in my day when I was evil.
I agree, actually. That's an interesting point.
She doesn't see herself as evil, and I mean, I guess I don't know if I do either. She was doing her job. That was what she was meant to do. And she kind of saw it as, like, helping women.
Yeah.
You can't fault her for that.
True. It's very true. There. And also we learned that Willow doesn't like Anya, which is interesting,
because
too.
Willow doesn't like anybody. Oh, okay, let me get on my soapbox on Willow for a second. Willow, I know everybody loves her because she's so precious and she wears those fuzzy pink sweaters and she's adorable and has a great haircut. But Willow is a little bit pettier and meaner than people give her credit for, because in this episode too, she was super mean about Cordelia, and I was like, bitch, what did Cordelia ever do to you except make fun of your clothes, which were admittedly not that great? You changed. You
just
got a better
bullying
wardrobe.
Her for like 10 years of her life. Okay. No big deal. That was before the show started.
That was before the show, and then supposedly they were like friends. Cordelia was always helping you out, giving you rides when there were vampires, and then you went and you, like, totally schmoozed on her boyfriend. So, like, really, she should be, like, more mad at you. So I don't know why you're talking smack. So, yeah, same thing with Anya. Like, what did Anya ever do to you?
I don't think you're wrong. I think you could say the same for Buffy, that they have their group and they like their group and they aren't necessarily super friendly or super forgiving.
Well, I'm not the biggest fan of that little group, so that's why I like Anya and Spike now.
They are very cliquey, you know, they are. And I think especially Buffy and Willow and Xander to some extent, but he isn't actually as, I guess he both Anya and Cordelia were his girlfriends, so it's a little bit different. But especially, you know, when the way Buffy interacted with Cordelia both on the show and also in the episode of Angel that we're going to be talking about in a bit, there is some hostility there that is maybe a little bit too much. Which is interesting to give that sort of that trait to you, the main character of your show. But I think it's interesting. I kind of like it. And I think that's a good observation about Willow, for sure. The final point in the discussion for this episode is that, you know, Angel, he's there, but it's there's not really a lot to talk about because he pretty much just skulks in the bushes and, you know.
Yeah, it's Angel. Weird. It's so weird. And, like, I'm assuming this was being, like, touted as a crossover, but how can it be a crossover when he's just in the background? Like, he does a little bit, and, like, the fact that the characters all talk to him or talk about him as, like, a secret is funny, but they could have had him off screen for a lot of it and had the characters do the same thing, and it would have had a similar effect for me.
Isn't it interesting?
He didn't add too much.
Right, isn't it interesting that Angel on his own show is so amazing, and then he comes back to Buffy, and he's
I like him more, because it's like getting an outside perspective from him. So I feel like when he's on his own show, you like understand that he's awkward and terrible, but Doyle and Cordelia are like, oh, that's kind of cute, you're terrible and awkward.
Yeah.
Versus like with everyone else, like on Buffy, he's supposed to be like this romantic hero, and so everyone is just kind of like, but why are you, like, why?
Yeah, exactly. I think this episode, this crossover, proves why it's such a good thing that Angel has his own show now.
Oh, yeah.
He fits much better with those people on that in the other city, in the other context of everything. But so he actually makes it through without ever letting Buffy know that he is there, although obviously, as we learn in I Will Remember You, Buffy can feel it inside when he is near, or whatever she says. But at the very end, of course, who else but Xander accidentally spills the beans, and, you know, the credits roll, and you hear the fork, you know, clash to the plate. And then, obviously, the next episode, we see where she ran off to. So that was sort of an interesting way to tie those two episodes together. And I think you're right. Whoever said it earlier in the show, like, this enemy was so weird and random and literally just a way to get Angel on. So Daniel. Set up the next episode. Yeah, Danielle.
Yeah, and
good job calling them out on it.
Yeah.
How dare they? And I do want to quickly randomly mention, I really like the way in which lately they've been, I don't know if you've been talking about this because I've missed a few episodes, but the way in which they bleed the audio into the credits, or like the way in which they've been ending the episodes, I think it's been starting this season, has been so much better because it's less melodramatic, but they end it on like on a quip or like something funny, and it's been something I've really been enjoying. It's a very small detail, but I think it adds a little bit, and since you mentioned it, I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought of it, but that's really true. I really enjoy how much time we spend in Giles' apartment. I just want to say it's one of my favorite group settings. And like, I just really enjoy it. So it's like one of the reasons I really enjoyed this episode is just because we are in Giles' apartment pretty much the whole time. And that makes me happy. So yay.
Giles is so long suffering about Buffy's obsession with Thanksgiving.
I know. And this is some interesting, like, speaking of weird, interesting cultural things, like the way they set all that up with the British people and everything, like so much weird stuff going on. But I do like, and that's, I guess, the last thing we should talk about here is that Buffy is really obsessed with having a nice Thanksgiving. You know, she's really, really intent on having this perfect Thanksgiving. And it is something that bleeds sort of into her character and is something that makes her act really weird about how sensitive they should be about the enemy they are fighting. She's just like, yeah, but I need more yams. And it's a very interesting sort of situation for her. Like, you kind of understand why, but it feels strange to me that she's acting that way. But, you know, whatever.
I mean, I think it's a coping mechanism for
how much
she's struggling at the moment, because I am like, really, mom, you went out of town Thanksgiving. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, Joyce, why?
But we've already decided, haven't we, that Joyce is like generally terrible. Like, she's not the best mom.
I do not hold that opinion.
I'm not in the hater Joyce club, but it's mean of her to go away for Thanksgiving.
You're probably a Bengal shipper too, so.
Well, we'll get into that next episode. I actually feel really bad about not being a Bengal shipper because I think Caitlin is so alone. So.
I know. It's okay, Caitlin. We'll let you. We'll let you have your space and sing praises.
Don't worry, Caitlin. I love the next episode. Spoiler alert. So you'll be fine. I actually really like it. But so wrapping up the Buffy discussion, so we can get into talking about Angel. Our favorite scenes. Let's start with Ariana because you have the chronologically first.
So mine was Anya watching Xander dig because it was so funny. She was so into it. Oh, so manly.
She was so mad when the professor was doing like the ceremonies.
I came here to watch Xander dig.
She's not rippling at all.
That was pretty hilarious. I think it's funny because if in any other show, like that scene would have been done, the person falling down the hole would have been like your victim of the week, you know, and here it's Sandra. I think that's kind of funny. I like how they did that. So what about Caitlin? What's yours?
Mine was the scene with Angel and Giles in the apartment. Like, I love the kind of reveal after Buffy walks out the door that Angel's been kind of hanging out in the apartment the whole time. And then they have this really kind of loaded conversation about, like, you know, she's not your responsibility now. She's not yours either. And they're like, but we're still going to look after her, which is kind of weird and invasive, but also kind of sweet. So there's a sort of odd dynamic there. But I always like when Angel interacts with all the supporting characters. Like, he has some wonderful moments with all of them, and I always like him with Giles, so I liked that whole conversation.
Agreed. That has to be awkward because Giles never really got over the Jenny thing, did he? From what I remember.
No, he still hates,
like,
Angel.
Yeah, he was like not BFFs season 3. So
yeah, so it is very sort of, there's a lot of history between those two characters. That's a really good scene. And Danielle, what about you?
My favorite scene was just like a little snippet, but it was when Spike is walking around with that decrepit blanket over his head, and he stops at, like, I guess what we're supposed to interpret as a vampire Thanksgiving. And there's like all these vampires crowded around a human, and like they're taking turns. And the look on Spike's face as he's standing outside the window is absolutely priceless. So out of everything in that whole episode, like, I keep going back to that. He just wanted to eat a person too.
I know. That is very, very funny. Mine is, because I couldn't take that one, is the scene where Spike keeps getting shot with arrows in the apartment.
And nobody cares.
I know. And he's like, watch the heart. And like, that is really funny to me. So yeah, that's our favorite scenes and our favorite lines. Ariana?
Mine is, I don't even know who says it because so many people do, but they're like, he's evil again. And he goes, I'm not evil again. Why does everyone think that? I haven't been evil for a long time.
Perfect.
I mean, that was amazing. Is definitely as awkward as he is on his own show in this episode.
And mine was sort of like a follow-up to that, because I think it was Willow's confrontation with Angel, that one, and mine was Willow talking to Giles and going, Angel, I saw him too, and Giles says, that's not terribly stealthy of him, and Willow says, I think he's lost his edge. I think that's funny. I like it. And Caitlin, best line of the episode.
Yeah, so when Hoos turns into the bear, and Spike goes, a bear! You made a bear! Buffy's like, I didn't mean to. Spike just has the best delivery. Undo it! Undo it!
Amazing. Thanks, Joss Whedon, for that brilliant line. And Danielle?
So I've noticed that I have a trend for this whole rewatchable episode in that everything I like has to relate to food. And in this episode, if you go through and like look at everything.
Like eating a person?
Eating a person, and then like the next one is just all food. But in this episode, my favorite line was just, I like mushy peas, from Giles when Buffy is chastising Willow for bringing frozen peas instead of fresh ones, and she's talking about them being mushy, and he's just kind of in the corner or in the background, he just goes, I like mushy peas.
Oh, I know, he's so happy. Like, Giles doesn't have a lot of joy right now. Just let him have the mushy peas. So that's the end of our Buffy discussion, and moving into Angel, episode 108, I Will Remember You. Another classic episode of Buffy and Angel for obvious reasons. So the synopsis is, in this episode, Angel becomes human, gets back together with Buffy, messes with the space-time continuum, and gives Lemuel gifts to demigods, all within the span of 1 hour-long episode. When Buffy gets wind that Angel was in town to stare at her, she gives him a few choice words right before a humanizing demon attacks. With his soul regained, Angel eats Pop-Tarts and gets down and dirty with Buffy. However, he learns from the Mora demons that Buffy and or himself will soon die now that Angel is human. Angel visits two oracles and begs them for his soulful vampirism that was once more. Was for, I don't know, something like that. The oracles note his heroism and turn back 24 hours to erase this episode's events. So, yeah, I guess that's, like, one thing. But going back to Buffy for a second, this is, like, basically the time when Angel tried to be Edward Cullen and Buffy was like, no. I actually think that's kind of funny that he tried to be, like, the silent stalker protector guy and she got really mad about it.
She should have. He was being weird.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's kind of cool. So, I mean, first of all, I mean, as I said, this is a classic episode. This is on a lot of people's list of favorite episodes, especially if they love the Angel and Buffy relationship, because this is like the ultimate payoff for that ship. And like, and obviously we'll get into it. And there's a lot of sort of angles to this. I like the episode because I love the way it ends. Like, I love the way they resolve it. And I love, even though I think it's too much, too mushy, you know, just in terms of the love stuff. Like, I really love that Angel and Buffy get to have it and that Angel is the only one that gets to remember. Like, I don't know. I think it's beautiful. And I love the imagery of the clock. Like, I think they do such a good job of foreshadowing everything and calling back. Like, my favorite line is, like, the callback to the first time and it takes on a whole new meaning. Like, it's the kind of time travel story or time, whatever you want to call it, that I really like. So I'm a fan. I think it's really good. Just for that, for the circularity of it all. What did you guys think? What were your newbie impressions of this episode?
Split, sort of. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate what they were going for, and I did like the question posed, like, should he remain human? Like, what are the consequences? And I really liked exploring that. I do think it was a little over the top in places. And I wasn't sure about how I felt about not only like that demon, but also the oracles, because those seemed really random to me and I just couldn't get on board with them. So I enjoyed the base of the episode, like what they were going for, but all of the other things that were kind of surrounding it didn't quite like hit the mark for me.
Mm-hmm. As a known Angel shipper, Caitlin, how was it for you? Do you remember watching it for the first time? Did it sort of break your heart, or was it like, did it feel a little bit like closure?
I have no idea how I reacted the first time because it was so long ago.
Okay.
This is one of the episodes that has stuck with me for the longest times. Like, when I think of Angel, like, this is like that moment right before the time turns mm-hmm. back is one that always sticks in my head when I think of the show. So it's one that sticks very heavily for me. I think it's a beautiful episode. I think it's heartbreaking. And if you looked at my Twitter yesterday, you saw that I was very heartbroken rewatching
yes,
it.
Yes, I did notice that. I wanted to give you a hug.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting exploration. Like, you see exactly what they could have
as
like the full potential basically of the couple is on display in this episode, and you get to see them both completely happy, which is sort of out of place, and maybe that's mm-hmm. why it feels a little weird, because Buffy and Angel never get to be happy, because that's the law of the universe. And so we get a taste of what that is. Like, this is why they are so drawn to each other, because this is what they could have. This is yes. how happy they could be if there weren't these certain outside forces, you know, stopping it from being. So I think it's really powerful to see exactly what they could have, but then, like, the reality of who they are and their importance in the bigger scheme of things comes crashing back in, and you see the sacrifices they're willing to make for one another again. And I mean, I'm always, like, beyond the Buffy and Angel part, like, I'm intrigued by that Angel is introducing this idea of the powers that be, and that there is apparently some higher something that is.
Yeah.
I don't remember talking about this so far, but, like, Doyle gets his visions from the powers that be, and the oracles are, like, the voices of the powers that be, essentially. And, like, no one kind of comments, like, there's the power that be, like, what? Like, it just sort of is, like, accepted, and Buffy's just like, oh, you went to see the oracles. We've never mentioned the oracles before. And it's just sort of accepted that there's some bigger power that's out there, which is interesting to me as well. But it also just shows that both Buffy and Angel are extremely important figures in this fight that's going on, like, to the point that an assassin was sent after them and to get rid of them, which, I don't know, it does a lot in for the mythos of the whole world for me too.
That's a good point. I never really realized that this, I mean, and I'm not even sure it is, but because it's dropped in as though it's something we already know about, but the powers that be, I mean, not really spoiler alert, but they're kind of a big deal, you know, in terms of what they're being referred to on the show, and dropping them in like this, saying, yeah, Buffy and Angel are warriors for, quote unquote, our side. That's what Doyle says. And they answer, or he answers to, or he gets his visions from the powers that be and all that stuff. And it's an interesting thing because that phrasing is so familiar to Buffy and Angel fans, but this might be the first time we hear it. And as you said, the first time we see the oracles, which is funny and weird, but I love it. Like, I love the they're so weird, but I love the oracles. But that's actually funny. Oh, were you gonna say something?
No, I just think that they're, like, the weirdest
things. I know. They are super weird and random and have no place in the show, but I think it's amazing.
They're so, like, like, they don't even feel like they belong to, like, either show. They're so bizarre.
I feel like that's kind of the point, though.
Almost Xena-like.
That's true. That's a good point. Maybe that's why I like them.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What did you say, Caitlin? I didn't mean to talk over you.
I'm just going to say, I feel like it's sort of the point that they feel like they don't quite belong because they're not of our world.
Mm-hmm. It's true. So I guess, like, what, just going back for 1 second to what you were saying earlier, Caitlin, and then we'll move on down the list, but is that I think actually you touched on why I love this episode so much, as I do. And as you guys know, like, I love both shows, but I'm always going to be a Buffy fan first. And so for me, what this episode does is it gives Buffy exactly what she's always wanted, and then it takes it away. You know, like she said, she was lying in bed. She's like, this is what I've always wanted. I'm a normal girl in bed with my normal boyfriend. Like, that's literally all she's ever wanted, like, through the entire show. It's like, I want to be a cheerleader. I want to go to the parties. I want to have a boyfriend. I don't want to fight demons. And it's like, there you go. And then Angel sort of makes the decision for both. Well, it is his life, I guess. So it makes sense. And he does it to save her life. Like, you know, it's all fine, but just really hard. Well, doesn't
we
he?
Should
like,
talk
it is,
about,
it's him.
We should talk about
okay,
this
we definitely should. We definitely should. I just always thought that, well, it's his body being dead or alive, and when she, like, wants him to be her stay-at-home boyfriend, I kind of feel like it's his choice whether he wants to be that role.
I definitely think it's his choice, but I also think that he is not thinking about the big picture. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like he gives up way too easily on this. I think he should. I mean, if he really loves her, then I feel like it would be better for her to have a supportive boyfriend who cares about her and gets her than a vampire in another city. Like, I don't think he's not helping her. He's never there. Like, you know what I mean? He lives in another city. He's not protecting her. But I don't think he's giving humans enough credit. I think he's gotten too used to being a vampire. And he's like, oh no, what would I do if I was a human? Like, there's humans helping her every day. And
that's true. But didn't he basically
look at the people in the initiative? Like, why doesn't he just become a badass? Like, you just have to work a little harder for it.
That's true. I think the specific choice he made was because they said Buffy was going to die. So he was like, well, there's something apparently that he was like, well, I have to be there to make sure that Buffy doesn't die. So I'm going to become a vampire
again.
She's
going to die. I mean, they said they're like the fates or whatever. They've seen it, that she's going to die. Then he was already a vampire. Like, that was already a thing, like, that was going to happen. It's not like he... I don't know. I feel like this choice is not going to be...
She's going to die sooner.
Right.
If she's going to die sooner with whatever this, like, rising darkness that the Mora demon was sort of the, you know, beginning of. Mm. Like, if he is not able to be one of the warriors for the good side or whatever, like... she will die much sooner than she would have.
So normally. Because he's a vampire without a soul, he's like a warrior for them. They've chosen him.
Pretty like much,
Buffy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the implication.
They're like putting him on the same level as Buffy.
Pretty much what it sounds like, at least.
That's the implication that the oracles make.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting in itself. We do have sort of moving a little bit along here. So I guess kind of going along the same track, and then we'll go back to the beginning in a bit. Like the Mora demons, that's what they said. They were like, they wanted to make Angel human again so that he and Buffy are more vulnerable. And sort of going along with what Ariana was saying, did it make sense that Angel would ask for his vampirism back, or would have been able to keep on the fight as a human? We kind of already answered this, I guess, but one thing I did want to bring up is that this is actually the second time that he's turned down.
I thought he was stupid the first time too.
The first time, I think it's stupid too, because he basically said it was to avoid the temptation of living like a human and getting too comfortable, which I get it, but then maybe just save it for special occasions. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. As Brittany pointed out, he already hangs out in the day anyway. Like he does. So, whatever. Whatever, that's Angel. True. You just like being emo. Well, put on your evanescence on some headphones.
I mean, there's definitely self-flagellation going on.
Yeah. For sure.
Has way 100%.
More, yeah. He feels like he has way more to make up for than he has already done, so he doesn't feel like he's made amends enough yet.
Which is why having someone like Cordelia around is more fun than having sad Buffy.
That's a good point. Mitch actually asked in the doc if you think Cordelia is jealous of Buffy for what she has with Angel. I didn't get that impression at all, but I'm wondering what you guys thought.
Doyle
is probably jealous.
Cordelia is always jealous of Buffy, I feel like, no matter what.
That's true.
I mean, I can understand the jealousy. I don't think she has romantic feelings for Angel, although I wish she did. But I can see in that situation, she's adjusting. She's found her place now. She has people who feel like they need her. So she feels like needed for the first time, I feel like, maybe ever.
Exactly. Yeah, and she felt like she's found her place, her calling.
And she Buffy's feels like thing. She's found, like, she's somebody's person. Like, she feels like Angel needs her, even though he kind of doesn't. But, like, she feels like he does. And then Buffy walks in, and it's like everything is shut down. You know, when Buffy's there, it's all about Buffy. And
right. I mean, she's like, I finally got my own show.
Yes.
I'm the leading lady, and then you come along. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think actually that's a lot a lot to do with it. Like, she even says she's good for two things, superstardom and, you know, fighting evil.
Yeah.
And then Buffy comes along and she is, Buffy is a different level of melodramatic than, and she brings it out in Angel too. And it's like, either you love it or you don't. But like, that's what those two characters bring out in each other. And Angel on his own with Cordelia, with Doyle in LA is just much more, you know, chill in a word. And Buffy brings the drama, and that's, you know, I understand why Cordelia is a little bit like, oh, not again, you know. It wasn't like when Oz visited, you know, it was much, much more easygoing.
She was excited to see Oz.
I mean, Oz just brings out the laconic in Angel, so.
That's true. And so, I mean, so Angel gets his humanity back, and the first thing he does, you know, Danielle is here, so we got to talk about it. The food! The first thing he does is eat chocolate. I think that's very accurate to a human experience. And yeah. He doesn't like yogurt. I like that scene. Yeah. I thought it was cute.
It is just like everything in the fridge. All of a sudden, he's just like, God, I am so hungry. And I felt him so much in that moment because... You know, if you're like running on adrenaline or like distracted by something else, you don't know how hungry you are. And then you just want to eat everything in the fridge. So it was like almost like a spirit animal moment for me.
I know. And it's like, you know, he's a vampire. He's running around being all fit. But that's easy because food doesn't taste good. And now like food tastes good and he just wants to eat it all. I can totally relate. So, so I understand. And there was a question, too, from Mitch, which was, at this point, did any of you guys actually think that he was going to be able to stay human forever? I mean, I guess not.
I guess there wouldn't be a show then.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's in storylines like this, that structure, the structure of shows and stuff, like, that kind of ruins it. Because at no point did I think it was going to stick, just because it is a series about Angel the Vampire.
But did you guys figure out, like, how he was going to get his vampirism back?
I just figured it would wear off. Mm, I thought it was, like a 24-hour thing.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that would have been interesting, too. So I'm I glad they did it
this way. Nice twist that he had to ask for it, even though I think he's stupid.
Yeah.
I think it makes more sense for him to make the choice.
Yeah.
Because then it's not like a... It's less of a, oh, we had this, but it was taken away from us by powers beyond our control. And this was like, I made the choice. It sucks. Like, I feel horrible, but it's a choice that I made, so I'm going to live with it.
Right. And it's also a good thing. Like, even though, as I said, like, I think it's really heartbreaking and interesting that Buffy doesn't get to have the memory. It's also a way for them to make sure that her show can continue sort of without... too many major changes, but Angel is obviously going to be very affected by this thing that happened on Angel, the TV show, you know?
I think it's important because I was like, dang, she was all starting to move on. I was kind of liking it. I think that it's important. I mean, honestly, I do like Buffy better when she's not sad.
Right.
And like with Angel and stuff, that's just like too much for me. So she was like getting happier and more interesting, and then I was like, oh god, now she's gonna go on Angel. It's gonna be all terrible all over again. So I think it's nice that she gets to keep staying on her own track.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. So, I mean, sort of going a little bit back to the oracles and to Doyle and everything that happened there, you know, Buffy and Angel's sort of love fest is interrupted because Doyle is still having visions. Which actually is an interesting, and I guess I wanted to ask Caitlin this. Do you think the fact that Doyle has a vision at this point is sort of an indication that the powers that be were going to keep using Doyle or keep using Angel as their warrior, or was it like an acknowledgement that they always knew this was going to go back to the way it was? Like, was it their way of getting Angel back on track?
I mean, I can't remember if we've said, but wasn't Doyle having visions before he ever met Angel? Like, I feel like...
Mm, That's a good question.
I've always run under the assumption, like, that he was already having the visions, and then he had one of, like, needing to join up with Angel. So, like, it would not have made sense to me for the visions to have stopped with Angel becoming human, because he had already been having them.
That's such a good question. I always assume that he started getting the visions right before he met Angel, and he just had some, like, introductory visions, like, here's your new job, like a PowerPoint vision, I don't know. Because he has been normal, like, we saw in that episode with his ex-wife and stuff that he was sort of quote-unquote normal for a long time. He didn't even know he was a demon, then he found out he was a demon, and he was like a quote-unquote like low-life person, and then he figured out that he had this higher calling. I'm just looking, like, no, I don't know. That's a very interesting question. So it could be that the powers that be would just kind of like pass him on to a new warrior or something. Who knows? That's interesting. If listeners have any thoughts on this, please write in, because now I'm super curious. So do we know, like, do we have any thoughts, newbies? Do we, the newbies, have any thoughts what Doyle might still be hiding behind that quote-unquote need-to-know basis that he's keeping Angel on? You know, we kind of feel like we know all his secrets already.
No, Doyle is so sketch. Like, I don't yeah. know. Doyle, I mean, I know people were starting to turn to, so, like, Mitch is now like, oh, I don't think he's evil anymore. I think he's nice mm-hmm. because of, like, the wife or whatever. I mean, he right. can, evil people can still have wives. Like, I don't know.
She's clearly attracted to sketchy people, so.
She is, clearly. I mean, Doyle seems like a nice man. I want him to be a nice man, but, like, I don't know why he has to be so sketch all the time.
Yeah. That's a good point. So you don't think there's anything, like, particularly he's hiding other than, like, his general evilness?
I don't know what he's hiding. I mean, I still have that theory that he has, like, a sister that's being held by some evil people, probably, like, the lawyers or whatever. Like, I don't know, some evil people. And then he has to... That's why Angel's part of some dark, masterful plan. I don't know.
I like that theory, actually. That's really cool. I will be excited to see how that pans out. What else? Did you guys have a feeling, this is a question from Mitch, that Buffy still felt some of what had been erased right after the rewind? Like, does she know on some level?
That's a good question. I think the way in which she was acting, maybe we were reading more into it because we still knew what happened. Mm-hmm. The only other way that I feel like she would know was if she can sense Angel's presence, does she sense more of Angel? You know,
like, interesting.
Because he was obviously staring at her after the rewind happened in a different way than he maybe had been staring at her a second previously. Mm-hmm. And so maybe she felt that rather than felt lingering memories. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good point. I never assumed she knew, because, like, turning back the time, like, there's no way she would remember something that hadn't happened yet. So it would only be if she had some kind of special Slayer connection to Angel that would make her privy to his memory of their shared experience or something like that. Like, I don't know. So that's obviously, like, a thing. Like, maybe that would come up in the future, or maybe Angel would tell her. Do you guys think that Angel's ever going to tell her about this?
Maybe
if he ever sees her again?
Really angsty moment when they're, like, fighting at some point. And she's
in the sewers.
Yes, in the sewers when they're emoting at each other, as Mitch said.
And we were having all that sex and you don't even remember. Now I have to live with it. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. That would be fun.
So the memory of peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah. You don't remember the peanut butter.
I love that he eats peanut butter in bed, because that is what Cordelia was doing. And when he got mad at her for eating, now he understands.
Good callback.
Maybe he got the idea from her. He's like, I need to see what this is about.
Or maybe it was him all along.
It was.
That's funny. That's amazing. So anything else to note about this episode before we move on? No?
My heart.
Oh, your heart. So, Caitlin, tell us about all of your favorite scenes.
the entire episode. I picked the moment before the time turns back, and because even before, like, it's been a while since I'd watched the episode, and when I think of it, that's the moment that I always think of. It's heartbreaking, but, you know, Buffy is, like, you know, the "I felt your heartbeat" is just mm-hmm. something that destroys me. And then when she's saying, you know, "I'll never forget," and then you flash to, like, she has no memory of it, which is just so heartbreaking. But it's, I like their melodrama, so yeah. I love that moment.
A lot of people like their melodrama. You're definitely not alone, I think. And I think for me, I'm just like, because I'm so ready for them both to move on, that I'm like, oh no, but I don't want you to, because the thing is, for them, like, as Buffy, like Buffy said, this is what she's always wanted. Like, this is literally like her dream come true, and it's not my dream. So I think that's why, like, that's the problem. But I totally understand from her point of view, like, this was her happy ending. Like, it just hit her like a ton of bricks. Like, this is the moment I finally get what I've always wanted. And then it's snatched away from her. And the heartbreak of that is so real. And they're like, I think their acting in that final moment is fantastic. Like, I think it's just the right amount of drama for me in that moment when they're saying goodbye, and she's going like, it's not enough time, and, you know, I don't want to forget. And she just keeps repeating, you know, I don't want to forget, I don't want to forget. And then boom, she's forgotten. And I think that's very powerful. I really, mm-hmm. really love it.
I mean, for me, Buffy and Angel are like the fairy tale couple. Like, they're
for better or for worse. Want, Caitlin? Like, they seem so miserable, like, all the time.
I mean, in the way that it's like the love at first sight and soulmate sort of thing, like, and all the good things that come with that and all the bad things that come with that. So it's something that they're never going to accept, like, awesome sex and food when he's human. but, like, there's just that... that connection that's like, feels like something higher, I guess, that, like, it feels like you get in fairy tale stories. And for whatever reason, like, you know, that's not always realistic. And so you move on, maybe, because it's not the actual, like, real life thing. But I feel like they're sort of the ideal to each other.
To quote Bachelor in Paradise, that's not love, that's obsession, which I feel like sometimes they are. I mean, except they were super cute in this episode, which is why Angel should just have been a human. He's dumb. But
that's true. I totally understand. I think that's like, there's a lot to be said for that kind of romance, you know, which is why Buffy and Angel is such a popular romance. It gets on the top 10 list of people's ships all the time for that reason. So, Danielle, tell us your favorite scene.
Well, to totally turn this conversation
OTP,
around.
OTP, Angel and food.
Angel and food. My favorite scene was him raiding, out of all of the scenes of Angel eating, my favorite was him raiding the fridge.
So, okay.
We touched on it, but just a reminder, like, I love food, Angel loves food, so it was great.
I ship it, Angel and food.
Yes. I feel like that's the appropriate
if else,
thing
that was
to
the,
do.
One of the most devastating things.
As soon as you turn human, that's what you should definitely do, is eat all the food.
Exactly.
All that's another thing he has memories of now, is like chocolate and peanut butter.
That is worse. I think that's much worse.
He's going to see that every day and be like, heartbroken. Poor guy. So, Ariana, what's your favorite scene?
Mine, oh my god, I died laughing. Like, in the opening scene, when Cordelia and Doyle are like, I wonder how it went. Like, yeah, because he saw Buffy again. I wonder what happened. And then he, like, takes out a stake. And Cordelia goes running in because she thinks he's going to stake himself. But no, he wasn't.
But no.
He was leveling his desk.
Yes.
Yeah, that was amazing. And, but, and
I
mean, mine,
that's totally something he would do, right? So I understand her worry.
And he always looks like miserable, so it was like an easy mistake to make. Yeah, and mine, I mean, the oracles are amazing. Like, I just love their randomness of them, so they are always going to be my favorite. But also, I really enjoyed, actually, even though I didn't really understand, like, I guess he called her to meet him there or something, I don't know, but she was on the beach, and he comes in, and they kiss, and it's like, that moment was like foreshadowed back in season 3 when she had that dream about him on the beach. That was like what that was eventually going to lead to. So I just thought that was a very, very interesting little parallel there, and a little bit of foreshadowing that Buffy does. And our favorite lines, Caitlin.
Okay. So mine was Cordelia talking to Doyle, and after Angel's become human and Angel and Buffy are down in Angel's apartment, and Cordelia says, "Oh, please, they've got the forbidden love of all time. They've been apart for months. Now he's suddenly human. I'm sure they're down there just having tea and crackers." And then you pan to them and they're sitting across from each other at the table.
Having tea and crackers, yeah.
Which I was so amazed at that, because we're set up to expect the opposite. And tea and crackers is a really random combination, like, to me. So the fact that that's what was happening was absolutely great.
Yeah, that was great. And Danielle?
I mean, I have two that I can't choose between.
They're both like the same thing.
I know.
They have different emphasis on words. So they're both from Angel. And the first one is, immediately after he realizes that he's hungry, he just goes, "Oh my God, food." And then when he's eating, it's, "God, I love food." So they're very different.
Very different.
But I can't choose between them. So they are both my favorites.
Amazing. And Ariana?
Mine definitely ties into yours, Danielle, with Angel and his food. And so he's, like, talking about how much he loves food. And Cordelia goes, "They didn't even have cookie dough fudge mint chip in your day." And he goes, "Oh, I want some. Can you get that? It'll go straight to your thighs."
So true. Very good. And I'll end up with my, which was the repeated changed meaning line of Buffy going at the top of the episode, "So then let's just stick to the plan, keep our distance until a lot of time has passed, and given enough time, we should be able to," and Angel goes, "forget." And at the beginning of the episode, it's before everything has happened, and he's just saying, like, finishing her sentence. And at the end of the episode, he's saying, "forget," because that's what she just did, and he is remembering that he said it the last time, and it's all just coming full circle. And I think it's so amazing. Like, this is, oh my God, this is one of my favorite tropes of these kinds of stories. Like, repeated words with new meaning after some time traveling thing has happened. Like in Prisoner of Azkaban and Harry Potter 2, when they go back in time and they hear everything, but from a new angle, and they understand everything a lot better. And the reader is, like, privy to the full picture. Ah, I think it's so good. I love it. Like, that moment, that repeated line makes the episode so, like, ah, it's so good. Such a good episode. Such a nice twist. I like when time travel stories are good like that. And that brings us to the end of the discussion for Pangs and I Will Remember You, and we will wrap up with some listener feedback. If you want to leave us listener feedback, spoiler free, you can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com, which is hyperbole.com. You can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And iTunes reviews, if you rate us 5 stars, then Danielle will always remember you.
Aww,
how wonderful.
Bitch.
Hugh Sarah McLachlan.
oh God, no.
And listener feedback. Caitlin and Ariana and Danielle, if you just want to start going down the list.
Sure. So Laura Jurgensmeyer says, I'm not a Buffy Angel shipper. I refuse to save Angel, but I will remember you breaks my heart every time. Me too. And I am a Angel shipper.
Okay, so Stephanie Merrill at S. Merrill Lee says, consider this, was Professor Walsh ignorant of werewolves, or was she speaking in code due to civilian presence?
Good point. I mean, definitely she ran away. She didn't, like, pull out her super secret gun that I definitely would be carrying around if I lived in a town with vampires, like a stun thing or something. But it's a good point. She could have just been, you know, telling Agent Finn about it in a public area. And Danielle?
Okay, so this tweet comes from Dan at It's Real Dan Smith. Just started rewatching Buffy / Angel to follow along with Rewatchable. I kind of forgot how great they are. So good.
Yay! And Mandy Kay says, I know I'm in the minority, but I really like Riley as a character. I hope at least some of you guys do, too.
I like Riley. I think he's dorky and kind of funny. And I like that he's got, like, he's, like, a secret agent. Even though he's a dork.
Yeah. Where are we at to now? So, Pangs, I like him, too. No.
Okay.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so I get the feeling that Riley is going to do not such great things, because it seems like the oldies or super fans are not fans of Riley. So.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's kind of, you got to go along with all the characters. You kind of change your opinion on them, you know, at some point. So who knows? Okay. Yeah. I like him too, though. I think he comes in, he's a super nice guy. I really like the friendship he has with Willow. I think that's really nice. I really like how different he is.
They
from
kind of have chemistry. I was
they
wondering for a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe Riley and Willow should get together. Now that Oz is gone.
I'm on team that one. I think that would be. But yeah. So Caitlin and Danielle, if you want to round us off with the last two.
Sure. So Emmy Foss says, thanks to Rewatchable for getting me to rewatch Angel the series and making me remember why I love Cordelia so much.
Aww. Well, I loved her on Buffy too, but yes, definitely awesome that Angel exists so she can be the hero. The
lead character. Really shining fully on Angel.
For sure.
And then we have a comment from Hypeable.com. This one's from RootBat3. And they say, if Mitch is really interested in getting some background information on Slayers and Watchers, I recommend watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. There may be a few minor discrepancies between the movie and the series, but I've always considered the movie to be canon in its general outline, and I'm pretty sure that the Slayer mythology is consistent from one to the other. And Mitch is hopefully far enough along in the show not to be completely turned off by the cheesiness of the movie.
I still say we need to do like a live commentary on this episode on this movie because it's amazing and it would be so much fun. But no, actually, I mean that's an interesting point. I think the big difference is that in the movie, the Slayer and the Watcher are like reborn, so it's always them, and they just are reborn in different times. Whereas obviously in the show, it's different
like
people.
Avatar.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's like that in Avatar. I thought
like they're always
people.
Paired.
It's the same
together.
Spirit. Like you're saying that the Slayer, like when she dies, that her spirit like goes into another.
Yeah,
person.
It's like literally the same person who looks the same in a different era of time.
Oh,
So she just dies and then she's reborn again in a new time. So I guess it is a lot different, actually. I don't really remember that much about it except for the funky fighting montages. So maybe we should rewatch it just to see what's different and what's the same. That would be fun. So rounding off the show now with Ariana's answers, where we let the newbies predict what is going to happen in Buffy
That's
season.
That's so cute, Mitch. Oh,
I know. Is it the first time you've seen that?
Yes. I haven't gotten one yet. We've had Mitch's musings and Brittany's brainstorms. So
aww.
I feel special.
Ariana's answers. Yeah. What should Danielle's be?
Danielle's dreams.
Dreams? Yeah.
Just all food. Yeah.
So yeah, we have Buffy episode 9, Something Blue, and Angel episode 9, Hero. Oh my god!
Yeah.
Someone's getting married.
Getting married?
Who is it? I wish it was Giles with one of his sexy girls. All of his sexy girls. He's become a polygamist. Who is getting married?
Maybe Anya goes crazy and thinks that she should get married.
Yes. Maybe Anya forces Xander to marry her. No, I don't... I mean... Is it a real... Is it a spell? Or is it a real marriage?
Is it even a marriage?
Maybe there's a spell put on everybody and they are, like, forced to fall in love. Okay, this seems like the kind of thing that 90s TV shows would do. It's like there's a spell on all the women and they, like, force all the men to marry them and they, like...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, right.
I don't know. What do you think, Danielle?
Maybe Buffy's dad is getting remarried and there's a spell that's cast and someone, like the bride goes into bridezilla mode and Buffy has to fight her.
She did go to see her dad.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's
maybe it was
one,
like,
Danielle.
Surprise, Buffy, I'm getting married.
Interesting. And, okay, so that's interesting. So what about Angel's episode Hero?
Okay, well, Angel is super sad now, obviously, because he saw Buffy, so he's like, and we can't be together, and I was human, but now I'm not, and I miss ice cream. And so he has to be shown why he's still a hero. Like, he's like, I have to be a hero now. I have to make up for it. And so he goes and does a big hero thing. What's that?
Superhero landing. Maybe Spike goes to Angel because he doesn't know what to do with his life now that he can't be himself. And there's, like, some sort of mentoring going on between Angel and Spike with how to be not a terrible person. And so Spike, like, tries to be a hero and then, like, it fails.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I feel like that's too early still for Spike. Like, he's still in his mourning period. Maybe by the end of the season, he'll be nice.
Yeah.
It's a slow process.
Well, interesting predictions. So, we'll find out next week. I'm getting really sick of the Netflix pictures on the episodes, by the way. I think they are really too much.
Spoilery.
But maybe like not in context, like they're probably not as spoilery as I feel like they are, but sometimes I'm like, really wouldn't want to know.
Spike is the cover photo for both Buffy and Angel, so.
I know, that in itself is a little, Well, you know, he was in that one episode of Angel season one, I think that's why. Yeah. That's for sure the reason that I'm going with.
He's the best, so he just warrants a place on there even with
a
cameo.
Exactly, right, of course. So we will find out next week when we are back for another episode of Rewatchable. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we hope you enjoyed this discussion. My name is Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Danielle.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah.